Of all the health conditions Americans feel the most uncomfortable with associating themselves due to social stigma is anything involving mental health. Perhaps this is too colloquially stated, but Americans do not wish to be known as potentially being crazy. Greetings again, I'm Adam Morgan. Nonetheless, one in five adults live with serious mental illness. 43.6 million with a psychiatric condition, 18.1% of adults have experienced anxiety disorder in the past year, and 9.8 million have thought about suicide, also in the past year. These are just some of the numbers. Succinctly speaking, there is a mental health crisis in America, and it has been going on for some time. Former Colorado Speaker of the House Andrew Romanoff currently leads the organization Mental Health Colorado. His focus is to bring a more visible light to the conditions of mental health so those with such challenges can gain the right treatment and care. Along with his communications director, Jen Marnowski, Speaker Romanoff joins us for this edition.
We are doing a better job of prevention and early intervention, but too many people, including folks in Colorado, are not getting the care they need. In fact, by some estimates, only half of Americans with a mental health disorder get care. Mm-hmm. That means in our state, 500,000 people who experience a mental health or substance use disorder go without treatment.
And a lot of those people don't acknowledge or don't even think they have an issue or a problem at all.
Well, that's true. And sometimes it's the product of the impairment itself. The illness prevents you from recognizing, and sometimes society discourages you from seeking care for the condition you've got. It happened, I will tell you, Adam, in my own family about 2.5 years ago. I had a very close relative. I thought of her like a kid's sister. She was actually my first cousin, closer to me than just about anybody in the world. And what I didn't know, what she didn't tell me or her mom or dad, was that she was suffering from a very deep depression. At least that's what I think it was. I can't ask her that question anymore. Because on New Year's Day, while she and I and her folks were celebrating the dawn of 2015, she walked into the backyard and shot herself to death.
Oh, no.
Without any warning in the world. So we're going to spend the rest of our lives trying to figure out how we missed the signs, and we'll never know. The only clue we've got, in part, comes from a note she left us.
Yeah.
She said, I love you all very much, and there's nothing you could have done. She said, I'm very sorry for the pain this will cause you. And then she said, please tell people it was a car accident. Because I think even in death, she wanted to protect her reputation. She didn't want people to know that she was suffering from depression or mental illness or that she was suicidal. So she came up with a cover story, which she asked us to honor, and
yeah. We
couldn't do that.
That's got to be the hardest things for families is when a resolution like that occurs and how to manage it in something that they don't want to speak about or don't want to acknowledge, yet they have to grapple with it and deal with it.
It's for our family, obviously, that changed our lives forever. And I took this job at Mental Health Colorado a couple years ago, not because I thought I could bring her back. I can't do that. But because I hoped I could help spare other families the anguish and heartbreak that we've suffered. And I tell her story to you and to others, not because it's so unique, but because it's so common. There's a suicide in America every 13 minutes.
Every 13 minutes.
That's 40,000 Americans, including 1,000 Coloradans, dying by suicide each year.
Now, does that include youth, too?
It does. Suicide, tragically, is one of the leading causes of death among teenagers and young adults. And Colorado has one of the highest suicide rates in the country. For reasons we're still trying to figure out and tackle.
Nobody knows why.
Well, there are a lot of theories. Some folks will tell you the Rocky Mountain West forms a suicide belt in part because of our history of independence, this notion that you ought to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and not acknowledge and help or not seek it, rather.
Really?
That's a theory. We don't do a particularly good job as a state of preventing some of these illnesses from reaching a crisis stage. In fact, too often we wait until it's too late. We liken this a little bit at Mental Health Colorado to a situation with cancer. If you went into a doctor's office and you said to the doctor, I've got a bump or a lump or something else wrong with me, and the doctor said to you, you know what, it could be cancer, But why don't we wait? Why don't you come back when it reaches stage four?
Yeah.
That doctor would be disbarred. It's essentially, though, what we've done when it comes to mental illness. We wait until it reaches a crisis stage, and then we use our jails and prisons and emergency rooms and sometimes our cemeteries to address this issue.
Yes. Yes, we do. I know, Jen, you have a stage four is one of your programs, isn't it?
Before stage four is something that we talk about. And in regards to that, we have screenings on our webpage, 9 screenings people can take in case they're questioning their mental wellness. They can go to our website, take the screening. It's a quick 5-minute screening, confidential, doctor approved, to see where their mental health is at. And then you get some resources from that to follow up with. And there are resources on that page as well if you feel you need help.
Yeah, that's something that we're going to talk about a little more later, but that was an opportune time to at least start to get that in the listeners' minds, that that resource is there and it's good to use as well. Andrew, you were saying that if you went to the doctor and doing something with physical health, you know, they would be right on that much more. That was one of the things the Affordable Care Act did, is that it made a parity for mental health treatment as equal to physical health treatment, too.
Well, the parity requirement actually preceded the Affordable Care Act, but you're right that that law, now under attack, makes mental health an essential benefit. None of these laws, though, is any good unless we actually enforce them. So one of the things our organization is trying to do is make sure that people get the coverage to which they're entitled, the coverage, after all, that they're paying for. In fact, if you go to our website at mentalhealthcolorado.org, you can take a survey. In addition to the screening tools that Jen was talking about, you can take a survey and let us know if you've been denied care, denied a mental health claim. Because you're right, Adam, an insurance company, by law, both state law and federal law, has to provide equal coverage for mental health and physical health. What we know in practice is that that's not always the case. A lot of folks don't even know there is such a law requiring mental health parity,
yeah,
or making mental health an essential benefit. And those laws are just paper promises unless we enforce them.
Unless we enforce them is the key, because they talk about in 1963 when John F. Kennedy, the Kennedy administration, came up with the Community Mental Health Act. But they were able to shed a good light on it, but they wanted to build community centers so there could be treatment, but they never built a community center.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and it's really a poignant story, because that law you mentioned was the very last that President Kennedy signed before his assassination in 1963, and it was well-intentioned. The idea was, we don't want to just warehouse people in institutions and put them through inhumane conditions. My mom used to work at a state mental hospital in Ohio, where I grew up,
yeah,
and once those hospitals were shut down, as you said, the theory at the time held that community groups would spring up and take care of people who were exiting those facilities. But that didn't happen for a lot of folks who were left instead to fend for themselves or to live under bridges or in their cars. I've often thought, if an alien landed on Earth and noticed people sleeping in cardboard boxes and wandering the streets and asked why people were living that way, and we said to the alien, well, those are folks with illness. Those are folks who have a mental illness or a substance use disorder. That's just how we deal with that problem. I think the alien would conclude that our society was barbaric.
Yeah. Yeah. Jen, are you also doing some trainings for policemen, these other institutions where people who have mental challenges are ending up, you know, like Andrew was saying, up under the streets, you know, homeless. And then you have the social workers that have to approach them, or the police officers that have to, if they do a crime or something that they don't even know anything about. Is that something necessary that Mental Health Colorado is looking at doing at some point?
Well, I think that could lead us to some legislation that got passed this past year, which we referred to as the 24-hour hold, when people in a mental health crisis could be taken into jail, especially in small communities where there weren't any other therapeutic care facilities. We passed a law that the governor signed and contributed a lot of money to get some of these people who are out on the streets who might be going into crisis to help sheriff's departments not have to put them in jail cells. So essentially, this money is going to help communities take these people to some therapeutic care facilities, take them to a therapist, get them the help they need, rather than put them into a jail situation. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we're doing to get out into the community. And we work with the legislature and with the governor's office to push that through. And this is just going into effect now.
Andrew, what's the difference in the care or the level of care or the lack of care between urban and rural?
Well, it's a terrific question. And what we've learned, and I think if you live in rural Colorado, what you know, is that access to care, especially in some of the small towns that Jen's talking about outside the metro area, is a lot harder to come by. There are fewer mental health professionals in sight. And on the flip side, there's often more stigma associated with mental illness, especially in a small town where everybody knows your name.
More stigma in a smaller town than a major one?
Well, if you're
because
in a community,
they know each other.
Mm-hmm. What we've heard, for example, I was down in La Junta a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And visiting with a mental health center, a center that used to have a sign outside its door that said mental health agency. There's a fellow who needed care, but refused to park at that agency. Instead, he would park several blocks away because his truck was very recognizable, and he didn't want people to know that he needed mental health care.
Yeah.
Now the same center actually provides both physical and mental health care in one location. It doesn't have the words mental health agency on the door, and he parks that truck in the front row of the parking lot. One of the workers there asked him,
amazing story.
Well, how come you're comfortable now? And he said, look, now people don't know. I could be coming in for a broken arm. I could be coming in for something else. And it's none of their business.
Yeah.
So it points to one of the solutions here, which is to integrate mental health into the primary care system. We've drawn this distinction, Adam, between mental health and physical health, when in fact science has shown us, and I think will increasingly show, that most forms of mental illness have some kind of physiological, biochemical, neurological component.
Are things we're seeing with people in substance abuse tied to in some way to mental health challenges as well?
Sure. So there's a couple things going on there. I mean, one, a substance use disorder, a drug or alcohol addiction, for example, is itself classified as a form of mental illness under the Bible of mental illness, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. But it's also the case, as you know, that a lot of folks who have a substance use disorder and don't get treatment choose to medicate themselves with drugs or alcohol. And the result is a co-occurring illness, both a substance use disorder and an underlying mental illness.
If someone is doing alcohol or drugs, and they're not even thinking it probably in terms of, I may have a mental health issue whatsoever, how do you get them there? How does somebody who knows and loves them help them approach getting some help?
Yeah, that's the single toughest question to answer, and it's one that we get all the time, especially from folks who have loved ones, as you said, who may be adults and are not willing or not even able because of the brain disorder itself to acknowledge what they need. One of the things we found effective is the use of peers, people who have themselves experienced a mental health or substance use disorder, maybe in some cases better positioned to help folks get the care they need than the professionals themselves.
Because they can spot the indicators?
Well, and I think folks may be more comfortable talking to somebody who's been through it than to a clinician. You know, there is one resource I want to make sure your listeners have at the tip of their fingers here. That is the crisis and counseling line. The state operates a 24/7 service through a group called Rocky Mountain Crisis Partners. The number is 844-493-TALK, 844-493-8255. It is staffed by both the peer specialists I described earlier and clinicians, mental health professionals, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Anybody can call for free, confidentially, from anywhere in the state. Not just if you're experiencing a crisis, but maybe you're experiencing a condition that you don't want to become a crisis, or maybe it's not even you that you're worried about, it's someone else.
Well, the other thing, I want to take you back to rural again, because the isolation in rural communities, that probably plays more of a bigger role than anything, because people are there, stuck with it. They don't see other people who could possibly help them for days on end.
And that's a reasonable explanation.
So family becomes more important then to help them?
Well, sure. And we've talked to a lot of folks, some of whom are retired and dedicated their entire lives and their life savings to caring for loved ones who have experienced severe mental illnesses. But as one mother put it to me in a community conversation we had a few months ago, she said, look, I'm not going to be here forever. And at some point, my daughter who has a mental illness will be on her own. And I want to know, she said, that she's not going to die on account of this illness. So we need to do a much better job of providing the care that Jen was alluding to earlier.
Andrew Romanoff and Jen Marnowski from Mental Health Colorado are our guests on this edition. The subject is gaining adequate treatment and care for those challenged with mental illness in Colorado, a topic that we will continue on our next edition. I'm Adam Morgan. Do keep in touch. Stay on your game. And we thank you for sharing a few moments of your weekend with us.